Yeah, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
This will be fun. I think it'll be kind of very casual, a conversation.
Yeah.
So if anyone like wants to like share a thought or like add on to something, I would say feel free. There's not very many of us here, so there's lots of space to talk.
Well, that's good. I was like, there's way more people than I thought.
It is nice. I think one thing that I wanted to start talking about, and it happened a little bit before we all gathered here at 150. You'll notice there's a speaker up in the corner. There is like a big kind of song or announcement that happens like at 10 minutes to the hour, every hour while the gallery is open. And I think I wanted to first ask you, ask you about that. Like, could you describe like what the fanfare is all about?
Fanfare was made with me and Devin. Devin was really the one that did most of the work. He's a good friend of mine. He plays bass in my band. I feel comfortable working with him. He had done music projects for Olga and Shazen's movie, The Influencers. And also, previously, I'd asked him to do a sound piece when I started doing the only times I've had sound in my exhibitions was with when Devin helped me out pretty much. He helped me do a jingle for a YouTube playlist called Flexer that I did in my last year of Emily Carr, where I had asked artists to send me a song on YouTube, and I compiled a playlist, and he wrote like a little introduction or jingle that we uploaded, and it would be the first thing that played. It's like 8 seconds long. So he's really, so that's how I know him. He did it on Ableton and keyboards, and it's pretty much all digital with like some samples, like a sample of a bell and stuff like that. I had previously been working at Hastings Racecourse for the horse races, and it was my first like sort of like technical photography job. Well, I guess that's not true. I did event photography like when I was 20, but that was like more technical or whatever. And I was sort of interested in sports fanfares as well as, what else was there? Celebratory short instrumentals that would play like, it's from historically like royal events. There'll be trumpets and stuff like that.
Right.
And there's a formula for it, which is, I think you use triads, so it sounds sort of uplifting. And me and Devin wrote one, and the intention was for it to sound like it was falling asleep halfway through. Like someone gave up or realized the person they were sort of introducing was sort of a joke, or like someone they didn't think would win the game or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funny. So there's this kind of like celebration that gets cut abruptly.
Yeah. Where someone still feels like they have to finish a song, but they kind of just lose interest or like fall asleep near
right.
the end. Or like sort of like I was even trying to get him to be like, can you just make it like even sound like they fell asleep on the keys kind of thing?
Right.
Which is like the second half of that ringing sound.
Hmm.
Yeah. It was fun. He is like, he's such a little, like, he used to play like a lot of music with us like more live, and now he's really, since doing this sound engineering program, he's like just sticks to his room and just like writes a lot and like has like 3 synths set up
right.
and all these plugins. So just like make stuff like that. So it was like, you could see how excited he is if we look at the file and see how many layers there is, sort of thing.
Right.
So it doesn't sound, I think at first I envisioned it being maybe just like 2 tracks, like a trumpet and a bass, where there's more sporty 90s ones where they use like a synthesized electric guitar sound kind of thing. It'll sound more like so cheesy in this like really nice, like, I don't know, way that people like just find it funny kind of thing.
Right, but it's short too, right? It's just like a couple seconds.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I thought it was a couple seconds. It's actually like 40 seconds.
Really?
Yeah.
It's drawn out. But yeah, like in terms of like, for the context of this exhibition, what was your impulse to like include some kind of sonic element? Because like this show is very like grounded and like formal and about like these 4 objects in the space. And I guess I'm curious, like, what this, like, extra kind of sonic component, like, brings to these. Like, like, I imagine it announcing, like, these sculptures, like, arriving into the room. It's almost like they, like, come out of the back here and then kind of set themselves up in some kind of way, mm-hmm. like, on the call from the sound. So, yeah, like, do you think there's much of a relationship between, like, this kind of celebration or, like, a kind of, like, falling asleep celebration and these?
Mm-hmm. Totally. We've talked about it before, like, like you use your example, gilding the lily.
Right.
And also, which is a nice example, but also like when you start making sort of overly decorative, enjoyable frames for your pictures that you make or collages, and then it becomes like this, then you can push it so far, maybe where you sort of look like you're just like having this over theatrical thing to show these pictures you must care about. Mm. And it's almost like dressing them and like, I don't know. They're louder than the pictures could be.
Right.
Just like the formal, physical aspects of it in the space. And so the sound way was totally another way to do it in this like announcement thing. And probably with the falling asleep part is also like, there's probably like a self-conscious part to it too, where like you're not really sure you believe in pictures that much anymore. You still kind of do.
Right.
But you sort of maybe more care about how we see them every day, we're presented with them online, in books, in advertising, more than I care about making them and just showing them.
Right.
Just that.
And I get that in the sense of this, but I also don't think that like including the sound element is like sarcastic or anything. I don't think you're like totally taking the piss out of being here. I'll lean forward a bit. Because I think there is something like actually quite serious. Because like yeah, while it is kind of you are making like a bit of a joke of like how it kind of dies halfway through, like there is still an intention of like really announcing like the presence of these things and on every hour that the gallery is open. It's not like this happens once at the beginning. It's this kind of like recurrent impulse for the sculptures to get some kind of action to them, and I kind of like that they. It's almost like every time the sound goes, like every hour they like reorganize or something in a way. I know they don't, but they're not lined up directly adjacent to each other or in any kind of straight lines. And I think there's something about how each sculpture is askew that is somehow like pushed further by the sound element.
No, that's cool. Yeah, like. It's nice being a little funny. Like, I'm trying to be a little funny and not too funny, because, like, it really protects yourself from criticism often. But, like, also, you just try to find that line where you want criticism, so you don't want to be too funny, because you don't want to seem like you don't want your peers to not communicate back some critical thing with you. Like, you hope that they can talk back with you or something, or not just, like, I guess, like, sometimes I think, like, if you're too funny, it can be, like, maybe a one-sided conversation. So, like, it was like this fine line of fineness. The hour thing was, Bopa actually helped suggest that. She was like, at first I was like, every half an hour? Because when you prepare for, don't worry about it, like openings, I haven't done too many, but I was like, oh, I guess like you want people in those 2.5 hours that they're here to hear the sound kind of thing.
Right.
That was the first thing I thought. And then when you slow down, it'd be like, oh, no, think of it as the exhibition. How do you want your exhibition to be like for 2.5 months when people approach the art? She was like, you could not hear it, or you could hear it depending on the right time, and then it wouldn't be like sort of like crowding people with the sound.
Right, like kind of forcing, like based on someone's time, that whether they planned to be here for it or whether they coincidentally were here, they were able to like hear that in some kind of relationship to these.
Yeah.
I think that's nice, because I don't think there's anything. Or was there anything in the literature for the exhibition that said it would happen at a time?
I think in the press release for the opening, it was going to start at every 50 minutes.
Okay.
And that, because like someone, or Nick was taking it, would be like, is it 10 minutes after? But like, also, I thought it would be a good idea to do it. I don't know, why would we not do it on the hour? I like this in Hastings race course, there's 8 races a day, and they'll do their announcement sound, which is like a short fake horn with someone talking every day, like races will start soon. The 10, they do it before the every hour because they know like the horses lag or like to accommodate for, it's like 10 minutes, everyone's going to be late, this sort of thing. People right. are getting ready, people are getting a drink or something like that.
It like takes time to do stuff. Yeah. And that's kind of and that's kind of funny thinking about in context to like to being in like an art gallery where nothing's moving. Like if we get this like 10 minutes before, it's like come on, like we got something to do, but there isn't anything to do.
Like you wait 10 minutes, it's just gonna be like it's just standing here.
Yeah, there's no real shift, and I think that's why it's interesting to like be here for it, because then you like actually notice some kind of temporal shift in like the space. Like it what there was a time where before the sound went, and then there's a time after. There's like a kind of shift, which is nice to come back and then like spend some more time with these after the sound. But I think like also that with a fanfare, like you're kind of talking about how it's this kind of like announcement, and it kind of comes out to like communicate something. And then I think there's also a way that we should think about these sculptures as being like their own kind of announcement. And what I mean by that is they have this status of being a sign. They're kind of like freestanding. They're on a metal pole, and they're kind of some kind of sign that you might encounter like in the street or in situ in some kind of environment. And like, I think about signs as being a kind of like announcement unto themselves, like a street sign or a stop sign. Like they have this inherent desire to communicate with whoever encounters it. And I think like these are communicating something too, because in like a different way than it would if they were just like hung on the wall flat. They're like free in the space.
Mm-hmm. What were we saying last time? It's really nice. It was nice making freestanding sculptures. I hadn't done that before. And I guess previously for Centre, I had made a sign that was, I used the dimensions of their acrylic street sign that was attached to the wall outside of their street on Georgia, and made a two-sided photo that kind of came out perpendicular, so the traffic on the street could come and look at it both ways, and it took away the sign that said Centre, which I could never see all the time anyway. A lot of times when I had worked at T2 when I went to Centre, people were like, where is it? Like, you walk by it kind of thing. So I just turned it into like a bar sign, so maybe someone would walk by it and be like, is it a bar? It just had like a picture of a glass, which was pretty much, after the opening, it might as well, and it's an opening, it might as well just be a bar. Yeah. But no, obviously, I care about it. It was a great show, sorry. But I liked doing that here for now. I've always liked like civic infrastructure. Like it was a big thing in sculpture too, where like you could see that like just like how like workwear construction sort of like came in this like very fashionable way. I think also people did like signage for a long time too. There's like Ken Lum, if you really like that. Like, yeah. I like, it's not just liking public art, but you like art that has multiple points of entry, and it isn't just people that went to post-secondary art institutions, but also people that are in the public space of the specific public spaces you go to that can look at it and like, maybe like, yeah, communicate with it, and it can communicate with them more than like, I don't know, maybe sometimes like, yeah, like some forms of contemporary art or fine art or painting, it might be harder to. It is a little bit more like, maybe I'm wrong, like in circles that require some sort of art history knowledge. Not that I think that like my work is entirely populist, but I think there's something nice about photographs that can do that. Like people see them all the time in non-fine art settings. So at least you can be like, oh yeah, this is like a photograph. Same with sound too. Like I can, especially if they kind of lean towards trying to look like advertising, then maybe they can start realizing all the thoughts they think when they encounter advertising.
Right. And like, I think what's different about these is like, you could have kind of manufactured some kind of sign that we like recognize as being like a sign that's actually produced in the world and actually has some kind of function, but like these definitely are not. These are these kind of like rickety wooden things that are held together in a way that you wouldn't come together with a sign. So there is like another kind of material consideration of like what it means to look at something that like tells us something. You're like, this isn't, it's not a plastic sign that's like printed on with like vinyl lettering
or something.
It's not so
obvious.
Yeah, there is like a real material intention to these, And I think that's nice because we kind of encounter them in the same way that we would a sign. We kind of like, it's at the same kind of height that we would see it, and there is content on them, but the content is kind of set askew by its material condition. Like the frame goes all the way down, you see the wood going all the way down to the floor. And then there's also these kind of, in two of them, in this one we have these like pieces of red doweling, and in the one closest to the window there's that extra box at the bottom. And I think there's this nice kind of like acknowledgement that you made to more like how those containers actually like do more than just like.
Oh, you mean like, yeah, they're like, it's like you can still see that I like formally care about making an artwork that I like the look of, not just like making some.
I imagine you making these and like having fun making them and like putting them together and like making these decisions, which are different from how you would like, how like that sign outside gets made kind of thing.
For sure. Yeah, no, totally. There's something that's hard to say, or at least I do, or I don't know if you do too, like coming out of a photo program too, where you still want to just unabashedly say, I have this desire to make something I think I like the look of, but also because there's like so much urgency right now, politically everywhere, and also you'll go through, you'll go through Emily Carr. It's like, isn't it known for, you know, having like a heavy academic, and like you have to take mandatory sociology, or also you're just like part of your peer group and culture now, your community, that is like being like, how could you so whimsically have time to make beautiful things at such an urgent time right now? Right. But trying to do that, because maybe you're self-conscious of making the overly branded conceptual art, that maybe you're not at this right time to seem like you can sincerely do something that doesn't seem like, I don't know. You want to communicate about stuff you care about, not in an obvious way because you're just trying to be poetic about it, but also you're self-conscious about how you're talking about it, because you know there's stakes of like a solo exhibition and it's online and you're graduating and you're worried about being hypocritical, seeking social capital at the same time. So at the same time, you just, you know, go for it, and you're still making formal artworks because maybe they should be that, and then you can have that practice where you care about all your politics alongside with it, and it will still affect each other.
Right, and like I think that like exercising the like capacity to care about a formal artwork is in and of itself like a choice that you're making to like actually spend some time and engage with it, and that kind of, I think that's like the entry point to make them be more engaging for like the viewer who comes in off the street into the gallery. Like you're not looking at like a plastic sign. Like there's like this quality of them being about you and about like what you care about in the world.
I was just thinking, I guess like the first time that I went through this phase being like, art shouldn't be so entertaining, and then I had seen, I don't know, Philip Pirano's exhibition at Palais de Tokyo, which was just like, just the documentation was so about entertaining, about how art is entertainment, but you can use that route of being entertaining to still talk to people, because people do want to be entertained at some degree. Like, you can still like, it's like you could be that action movie you wanted to.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
And I mean, part of it is about like entertaining yourself too. Like, you need to like, you need to care about something enough to actually like go through the process of making it. And yeah, like I've been talking about these works as being kind of like signs, but they're also kind of like, we started off talking about, they're also like photographic, and they are kind of made up of images that, if they weren't kind of constructed in this way, they would be like hung on the wall. So also with these, I kind of sense this feeling that it's important to think about them in the way that they could be on the wall, but because they aren't, we have this kind of capacity to move around them, to move and like look at the backside, because they all have a backside that's equally as important as the front side.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing that I still haven't been able to like decide yet is which one I, or when I care if it's the backside or not. And like, how do you feel about them? Do you see there being like a backside to these or a front?
Totally. I think, I was talking to, we were talking the other day being like, I can't pretend I love all of them equally. Like, it would be like, oh, I love them all evenly. They all put as much effort. I wish I could say that into every picture evenly, but it's like, no, I totally had favorites that I think I spent more time on than others, or like thought of, or like cared about more. And like, then you're trying to trace what it means to like work on something that you care about more, and you're, I can't tell if I like am more indecisive with it or more like, okay, yeah, it's totally, I already saw it in my head, it's gonna be like that. Cause then some of them, the ones that I also, I don't know, you could see that the intention wasn't as direct or like clear, that I like left some things for chance because I wasn't so sure about it. I ended up liking more than the other sides. And then it was nice putting them in this room and moving them around that day we came in. I knew that there was gonna be channels where people could walk either from the back or the front of them. And it would turn into these things where like, if you were in between two or three, there'd almost be rooms in between the rooms and you wouldn't be able to see all of them at once if they were all on the walls. Right. So I liked that, in that there's like spaces in this space. And it also gives you some privacy to like look at some images on your own in this weird way when you imagine being here with other people.
Right, yeah, there's this, like, at the opening, there was a funny moment where I think I was looking at this one here, and I was looking at it from this side, and there's someone looking at the other side facing me, and it was, like, a kind of unique thing where, like, I felt like, it's like, wow, this person and I are standing, like, face-to-face looking at something that, like, is different on both sides. We're looking at the same object, but we're seeing different things.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of, like, an exciting way of, like, really noticing with my body like the different ways that you can see the world. And I think also in that is somehow like you've selected images that are, that enable that like spatial contingency to, for us to like come into something. Like, for example, like when I was standing looking at this one, I was looking at that computer screen and there was like a formal referent of like this like infinitely repeating like dialogue box on the computer monitor. And I think that that was like a nice emphasis to the other sensation that I had of like looking at this while someone else is looking at the other side. And yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you go about selecting or editing the photos to be made into these structures. Cause like, I know that you're not necessarily someone who's like always photographing.
Yeah.
You're not always out like thinking about an image that you want to capture. In this way, you kind of like accumulate images, like as you just like move through, whether like you make them or whether you use found images. I know you've before talked about how you like you don't see too much of a distinction there.
Yeah.
So like from a big body, how do you choose like the Prius on the entry?
Yeah, Prius is good. Manager of that Prius, we were in Palm Desert last summer. I knew I wanted to see a picture of, like, I knew I wanted to make something look like a car ad for something like a Prius. Like, I had done, I think maybe when people think of a nice car ad, when you are thinking about making a nice photo, you could think of a more upscale car, but I suddenly realized, like, the friends, like, the five friends I knew that had a car, they were mostly Toyotas, and two of them were Priuses. So you sort of think about this, like, car that's like closer, or I don't know, you interact with more. But also in terms of the photo thing is I definitely, so that one I had this like advertising goal behind my head to make like a car that looked like it kind of stood alone, but if you look closer it kind of definitely looked like a crappy ad, or like better than like a Craigslist car ad where like someone's just taking photo of it for like instrumental purposes to be like, I gotta post this and like sell my car, but like just like that in between that, like a little bit of care, but like not care enough. You're not like producing an ad. But I definitely like looking at pictures more than I like taking them. Probably happened sometime in, I'm just out of university, so I probably talk about university a lot, but it was totally just maybe in my third year or fourth year. The program can affect you, or it's kind of a small program that's really, it's not a, like that you've been to that little room. It's like a pretty little room. And then there's like a lab. It can be different depending on like your peers in that year kind of thing. But I was getting a little tired of it. I had like three teachers that all sort of like were taught under the Vancouver School of Photography, and they like would go out and do sort of like reportage kind of stuff. And then at the same time, I was taking that class with Magnolia about how we should be asking for permission when we take images, especially of people, or like, and about also landscape photography being like the history, just being this big sort of like taking and used for advertising for like colonizers to come in and live in Canada even. When you study all that, you sort of just start freezing up and you have like two options. You can take photos of like objects in privacy in your studio or maybe outside in more private terms, or you could take just like self-portraiture if you wanted to take photos of people. I guess the third option is like asking for permission and taking photos of your friends that you feel comfortable with, or after a long friendship, you feel like you can do that, depending on the friend too, if they feel warm to it. Sometimes you don't know, sometimes like you're friends with someone for a long time and they actually don't want their photo taken and they're like, well, you keep doing this. Like, but so because of that, I sort of stopped taking photos and I started freezing up doing that, and I knew I wanted to look at them and I liked showing them and I liked being with other people and like looking at other pictures with other people. I was like excited to do that. It is really social for me, just more looking than taking. So right now I'm at this point where I'm just looking at photos I took before that and going through like old hard drives or photos where like that part of working for Hastings Race Course was a nice like kind of jump start I needed, where I'm like, I'm getting paid and it's my job to take photos of horses and I have to. It's sort of just sort of like, jogged my going out there using a camera thing. In between that, I was scanning too, right. I guess. It's like less camera stuff.
Yeah. It is interesting thinking about like permission or a kind of like conversation around like private versus public, because like, I don't know, I also imagine like recently, or somewhat recently, I went back and looked at a bunch of like my old files from when I was like 16, and it was traumatizing.
I heard.
And
you couldn't even open some folders.
Yeah, exactly. So
you
like,
were just
I
like, I can't open this.
it's interesting to like not give yourself permission, because if you're talking about like feeling limited of like going out into the world and photographing, so you kind of like look at your own work, your own past stuff. But you can also be taking something by like going back like 8 years and like looking at images that you made then. Like that is also just as distant from kind of like going out there. So there's this weird way where like I found myself like falling victim to like, I won't even like let myself look at myself when I was 15 kind of thing. So I think it's
way that like the self can negotiate like what's permissible and what isn't. So like when you go back in your archives, like do you feel distant from like those pictures? Like how long ago did you do the photograph of the Prius?
Prius was a summer ago.
Okay.
It was July.
Okay.
July. So. Yeah. That one was like, probably like that was like 1 of 2 months I took photos like on that year, maybe.
Right.
I mean, yeah, that was with a camera outside. Active,
yeah.
Or even in the studio, maybe like the other one was like pressed by like the Lynn Prize thing. I was like, "Hey, I gotta take a picture." Oh my god!
Right.
But like, but then there was that. But it's funny that you're saying that about your folder thing. I wanted to. I was like, "Yo, Bubba, we should get a slideshow, and I should be like, this is Graham's folder," and then it would be. I was like, it'll be funny, and then we could start thinking about how, because you seem comfortable. Or wait. You're pretty good at going out or like taking photos of the medium format. There's quite a setup involved.
Yeah.
And then you go in and you do your layering in Photoshop and you do like tutorials where you, I remember that there's that rope one where you like, I don't know, it's like sort of like half fabricated but you can't really see, but you still, no, your fabrication is a little bit less obvious.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's something about, for me, like when I go out and like make photographs, in a way I feel like the act of doing it is like is a way of giving myself permission to like make a photograph. So if I go out with my camera, it's set up on a tripod, it's very slow,
it like takes time to like make a picture, and there's something about like the process that feels, that's a way that I kind of have an agency on like what's photographed, rather like I'm not going out and like snapping pictures quickly with like a small camera.
Yeah.
There's this kind of like labor involved with making an image, and like, yeah, like maybe, I don't know why I don't necessarily always worry about what I'm photographing. Also, I'm photographing like inert objects too.
That's
so, there's not a ton at stake there.
But that's kind of nice to think of. Like, maybe I should just stop using like point and shoot cameras or something, because like then I'm like, ah, it's like there's something about it that's so classically intrusive. But maybe it's like, it's sometimes it's nice when you realize your interested photo is just like, ah, it's like I like working with gear, and like being next to it makes it feel like you're working with someone that's going to support you do it, like just setting it up. It doesn't just become this like meditative thing, but it just feels like the more you back out, you can't really, because you've set up all this stuff that's just going to help you be there. Like, does that kind of make sense?
Right. Yeah, I get that, but like, I don't know. I wouldn't want you to not shoot with a point and shoot.
No, yeah, I'm probably going to shoot.
Because I think what's so like integral to these has been this process of you going back in and like culling stuff back up.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems that I face when I make work is because it is so laborious to set up the 4x5 to take the picture, it takes like several steps to even see the picture, and in that I kind of have a responsibility to use it for something. There's not often where I kind of like know all the pictures that I have over the recent years. I couldn't like go back and like be like
just
totally
be surprised
by
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what the like where the glint is in these is I get the sense of like you going back through and like rebuilding these relationships between what it was like when you took that picture the first time and what you're feeling now towards it and how you're going to make them into these like freestanding things. So I think like the space of you going back and re-engaging with the pictures you took, that's where it's like so active and like productive in these, because they feel like somehow the pictures are, they feel like really intentional to these structures, and it wouldn't be the same just like seeing the pictures on their own. Like, you've put them in this context for a certain reason.
Yeah, this probably just goes back to like, when you talk about your photography, because you still work with framework, but the images are so much more present, it is the more, the focus, there's like more, you like the pictures you take. It's like, it's great. Or you like photography, whereas like, it's good when I think about that for me to learn about how I am putting more effort into like, or not more effort, but like maybe just more time, or like more even thinking time and thinking about the, just the sculpture element kind of thing.
Right.
That it seems obvious that I do put the photos second. They're so secondary. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like,
right, they become like decorative in a way, like
yeah, they become like almost like textiles to like that outfit and the second part, or like the pattern that it is, like the structure kind of thing, which I don't mind. I talk about, we were talking about before, like I like fashion and I like design elements, and I don't think design is so separated from art, where like you're like, this is the focus. I don't know how to explain it, but like I like this design element where I'm together, like making this thing that I think, I don't know, I don't mind that it comes secondary after. Right. And I can't tell if it's because like, yeah, I don't know. It's probably, yeah, again, has to do with like, I more enjoy looking at images than taking them. Maybe if I cared more about the taking of the images, then I would worry about their clearness in like, not this like blocking of their presentation before the structure kind of part of it.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know, maybe it'll change. Things change, I guess. Like maybe I'll start getting into, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like I might just stop taking photos. This is the last show. No, it's not gonna be.
I mean, like what was the most recent like photograph taken in these assemblages?
Oh, I guess apart from the found ones, the two bells, the bell tower and the little bell tower, those, I mean, I didn't take those photos, but they're images that I took from, like iStock. You can find, like, the cheapest tier, and then the bell. And the background is some scanned assemblages from the rest of the file on that Lexus image that was corrupted. So it's a collage in front of an old image. The bar behind it actually still has the watermark on it. So it's like part of putting like those bars in front of my images is just like, look, you can just hide the watermark.
Right.
It's up there, the watermark's there.
That's pretty sneaky.
Yeah.
So you just like screenshotted those images or?
Okay. You can download the sample.
Right, so and it has like those, that X through it or something with the big
Yeah, or just that, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to think about how you can still do so much with like the kind of sample that's offered to you for free.
You know,
like
it's even, a pretty big sample.
Even though it's free, there still is content there and you can still like do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to think of like how, like what you would have done had you paid for it, had you paid like the dollar for the photograph.
Yeah.
Like would it have been like so much different?
I know.
Like
giant
no, it wouldn't.
And just like get a vinyl of a giant bell right here. Probably could have. I think it was $12. I think I end up at this point now, because I did that in my grad show, where it was pretty funny. I would be at the dock and only like Eduardo and Carlos would be like, yeah, you're printing all these stock images. It just like has giant watermarks everywhere until they see the final show. If you see my work, it has like a CNC kind of like layer in front of it where you kind of do this thing where you make something decorative, just cover all the watermarks in this like way where everyone's like, wow, like.
Right,
but
so
only
through
Carlos
that.
Are like, oh, nice. Like, but through that, I guess at that point, I buy the images. That was $12. I can buy that bell.
My
bell now.
I think my point is that you like didn't. You made the choice not to, and therefore it's a specific way.
Oh yeah, I didn't use the image I bought. I used the sample image. Right. But I bought the. I feel like I don't know. Just being so safe. just worrying too much. You can email and ask them. Do you think it's okay?
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, apart from the two collages. The computer, the day, month, year one from the Hastings Racecourse. That's
right.
Yeah, I really like that picture. I don't know why. Like sometimes I was like, oh, I like that one the most. Like, it's this over yellow, just like photo of my desktop computer, which is kind of nice. I really like. Yeah, I really like that picture. I like the. I like how nicely it's gonna age, like that Mac. It's like
right.
a 2000s Mac. Like when you think about things like people like William Eggleston or whatever, or that there's like design objects, pieces of furniture, or things in the imager, the image that seems so banal at the time, or like they're so vernacular that later, you know, it's just going to take 20 years for it to be overly 2000s, and all you can see about that image is about how 2000s it is, or
right,
something.
It kind of like accrues this like value over time.
Or also like, yeah, like right now, because we're encountering so many images on the internet, we are so lucky to have access to everything all the time. I don't know, just like how people can oversee like, yeah, like a Matrix 2000s aesthetic. And now you won't really know things. You won't really know the history of objects that well, but you can train yourself to understand the language of design slowly by just watching movies or seeing old photos or seeing old furniture things to be like, oh, I know when that's from, kind of thing. And back then, they were, you know, culture was like this. People thought this kind of stuff. So, like, I think that...
Here it is.
Yeah. How good, we ran out of time. That's it.
Is this where it's fallen asleep?
Yeah.
On the keyboard?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Right, okay, so yeah, that's what we were talking about at the beginning.
Yeah.
I think that's all the time we have. I don't know if there's any questions or if anyone else wants to contribute further. But.
I just wonder if you could share a bit more about like the relationship between images and conversation. Like, is there a narrative or is it meant to be sort of
Oh, yeah. I definitely... Oh, that's nice. I try to be... you can learn this thing where you can be anti-narrative. And there's, like, a big movement, and especially in collage, or where heroic narratives... It's, like, an old feminist thing where, like, the hero will go in, and then part of that is, like, having an even literature beginnings to ends. So I think collage started with this thing where, like, let's take that back and, like, make the timeline disjointed and stuff like that. So we didn't really talk about it, but, like, I kind of try to make it, I try to make it not too narrative-like, not too cinematic-like in this, like, storyboard kind of way. There will be one, because people, yeah, I guess when you're given a series of images, you'll try to attach them together in, like, a timeline. It's funny to notice that people's desire just to do that, because probably we're so used to seeing movies, too, or seeing photo books where there's, like, pages and beginnings and ends and stuff like that. So maybe I hope people notice that, but not really. But there will be, whether you try or not. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like there's some kind of, like, narrative that comes through how they're, the fact that they are these freestanding things. Like, you come in and your body, like, has to kind of, like, move around to look at it. And I think that's maybe, like, a moment wherein, like, the narrative comes from, like, whoever's looking at it in that little twist of the head to, like, look around and see what's on the other side. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, like, my reading of them is that some kind of narrative comes out in, like, much more nuanced ways that are...
Yeah, your personal experience of it. Yeah.
Which hopefully is nice. And it wouldn't be the same if, like, they're on the wall and you just, like, had a kind of, like, linear fashion. Because also, if you see the works from the street, you can see them through the street. Like, the windows here at ArtSpeak are so nice and there's so much traffic. Like, people look in all the time and are like, oh, well, what is in this space? So I think there's this narrative of, like, coming in from outside, then inside, and then you see the one side, and then you see the back side, and then you leave. It's kind of like there's this funny narrative of, like, actually moving through the space.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, I totally made it for the street. Like, I've never worked in a space. When you make something for a space, it has, like, a big window where you look in and out, and it, maybe people will notice that when they start approaching the images. There's a more formal desire for me to communicate where it's, like, clearly I made it so that, like, the people in the street are prioritized in this, where it's, like, everything's facing that way. Like, I mean, like, you could approach it from the other angle because it's double-sided, but yeah, we were joking, like, ah, it's for the smokers. You smoke and look at them, that thing.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the vowels a little bit? Was it an image that you got into because it's, like, a temporal thing and you're muted in this kind of context?
Oh, yeah. You got it pretty good in your writing. It does have to do mostly with the fanfare. I had this idea to make, at first, two sort of bell tower-like things in the back, accompanied with the two speakers, knowing that there'll be two speakers, knowing that we'd make a fanfare that would pan from the left and right speakers kind of thing. This one, I think this one, yeah, this one's more bell towery. That one was called, like, a little apex. But the bells were used to sort of, they're probably the closest images to the sound, or, like, when I was making it, knowing that there would be sound with these photographs, or these photographs would come with sound. It was just, like, without trying it to be too didactic, but when people are here.
They seem like pre-photographic kind of, they're almost painted.
Oh,
you
know, yeah.
So that was interesting.
That's nice. I so wish I knew I did painting all the time. I took that, yeah, that's really nice. I took a vast with some painters, and it's funny how different we're taught when you're stuck in school. Like, painters just have a whole, obviously, other field where they, like, approach painting. And I think constantly also, even dipping into sculpture photo, I'm trying to learn more about it to try to make my photos use the rules of painting. But I can say that shallowly, and, like, most painters will be like, I don't know, what are you doing? Like, I don't know, like, I feel like I can't say that. There's painters in the room, I know there are.
But, like, yeah, I guess, like, my thought on that is,
It's also funny that the bells are the two images that like you didn't take. They're like the ones that you've sourced from these other means. So yeah, it makes sense that they're kind of like stripped down or something else because your relationship with them is different. So they're, yeah. I like that they're kind of like referencing being like a didactic image, but they're also not didactic in like their distance from you and like making them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think that's actually like a nice touch.
That's nice. How like, is it iconic or non-iconic when it just becomes like indexical when it's just an object with like sort of a background that's not too paid attention for? You see that in like Craigslist photography, maybe less where like, or again, advertising, where like the background has to be neutral to present this object, and then you can just focus on that object, and then it becomes more physical of an object when you see that image in an ad, like you can imagine the product being there in front of you.
Right.
So it's nice to also, if you're finding images mostly on stock images, because the intentions are eventually they're gonna be in ads, there's that no background. You can even get pings, and then accompanying it with the sculpture, it was kind of almost like I could have just made a bell and put it on the thing, but right. You can do the thing I like to do and put a photo with the sculpture. It's nice the image will announce the sound.
Yeah, in a way, right?
Nice.
It's kind of like some static object that like comes up, like I'm almost seeing it as this sort of like triangulation between the images and the speakers being roughly the same size. I'm just wondering if you like thought about that.
No, it's actually pretty nice that you think. At first I wanted to build platforms for the speakers because I like the way speakers look, and I kind of imagined putting them like on these plinths even, and we went with that other idea because you can still see them now, but I think just as much as I like, it's nice that some people I feel like are paying attention to when you see a speaker, you can anticipate sound in this really like not so subtly artistic way, but because we've maybe been to art exhibitions or stuff like that, or we're entering a space being like, oh, there's gonna be sound, like probably, maybe, soon or whenever. So like it's, I guess I didn't think about this too, but maybe like those images of seeing the speakers could be even louder than like the bells even, or might cue something with the two bells just because of the numbers of all of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's too far of reach, but usually when I don't mind that. I kind of like that. I kind of like that, like, I don't know, there's no secrets. Like, let me tell you anything, it will be sound. And you need to build like boxes to hide them in or something. I don't know. Is that kind of, did I trail off? Or
I was thinking more about like the fanfare as being this like ritualistic sound that you would associate with some kind of like ceremony or something. Like
yeah.
A scene, so it seems like just the sounds articulate sort of imaginary image, where these images articulate like an imaginary sound.
Oh,
like,
I see. Oh, I see, like there's two scenarios with two different ones. One's missing an image and one missing a sound. Yeah, that's nice. I didn't think about it like that. I wonder how often people try to like fill in the second thing when they see like one little component in an art show. I don't know. It's good.
Because of the point I was like saying. shown in a very partial way, and it's different from different structures that you have elsewhere, with a few exceptions. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of go back to this neurotic tension, which I really appreciate in the work generally.
Yeah.
And this point, because it reminds me of the fragility of course, and so it's the skinniness, right, which is obvious. But I was wondering if you could talk more about this fragility, because I think that there's an interesting temporal aspect to your work. And I don't know if you've talked about it very much, but like, you know, we spoke about narrative and so on, but I'm really interested in the commentary around commodities that you have and photographs as like commodities to be circulated among. So, like, do you think of these somewhere between ruins or objects and construction in relation to like the city infrastructure that you're so interested in? Like, it seems like there could be a relation there where they sit kind of ambiguously between like ruins or the promise of something flashy.
Yeah. No. Yeah. There's lots there. Definitely, those little clear things are silly, and they seem like a couple things like another added decoration. Like, I have a studio practice, and I can like add things bit by bit, or like I can treat my pictures at shelves, and like that adding probably has more to do with me sort of like over flourishing. I guess I forget this fan character is also, it's called a flourish, like over flourishing the pictures kind of thing. And they probably have something to do with, at first I was a lot of this, I shouldn't have brought it up so late, I was like the second stage to this exhibition I did in Montreal where I used this clay material that is like a fake clay material that is just like a self-drying clay that comes in a ceramic color that looks like it's baked. It takes about like 2 days to dry kind of thing. And I like things that have like that fakeness, that rushed fakeness for it. It reminds me of digital photography and like printing in Xerox. It's not like this like overly precious thing that I think like tries to mimic this other thing, but it's just like a copy of it. In terms of, what was the other second half? The city, oh yeah, the commodity of photos. Yeah, it's so weird, it's totally not so like how it is paintings. Like you learn slowly in school, like you can make editions of 5 of each of your prints and you can number them, and the first one's worth the most, and the second and third are worth in the same pool, and then the fourth and fifth are not. It's like printing too. When you start doing photographic sculpture, if it gets this, whatever, abstract or formal, you can't really make more than one. So then it'll be like a single photo. I think sometimes you can maybe, I mean, if you really want to, you could do an edition. So it kind of cuts away the selling point and makes it more precious, I guess, but not really, but just sort of like, I don't know. I'm not saying like I had this big pursuit to be like anti-capitalist, because it's not really, then you're just like, no one really buys sculptures. And like, I find, and I've had other sculpture people say this, so it is a way to sort of protect myself from being like, I don't really think this is gonna sell, like, I'm not trying to make these to sell a bunch kind of thing. But you definitely think about this, like right now when you think about like all the urgencies of art stuff right now, when you sort of like are making such a physical object, like, I don't know, you're self-conscious about, especially just coming out of school, being like, am I trying to make things that are selling to collectors? Or like, are you kind of trying to show at artist-run centers, or like try to make something that you feel like you're being risky at and you just want to maybe do more shows or something like that? You can't really decide. It's just not, there's obviously like an in-between, it's not black or white. The ruin stuff, like, do you think that I'll just like these will be ruined after, or like I'll just like not care about them after, because I'm like, they'll just be in storage. They might be.
I should add that like this kind of like I really appreciate like the solidity of the place versus like, you know, things like this point, and then the kind of the more fragile materials that you have are more artisanal rather than industrial, you know, so that can
happen.
So like it makes me think of like the temporal aspects of the materials and like how things evolve. And so For me, these communicate something about like how commodities are like, advertised and sold, you know. So I think there's that commentary, which is really interesting. But he's sitting within a certain time.
Oh yeah, I think I try to make it. Oh my gosh, I can't say the word millennial, is so embarrassing. I try to make it for my peers and like my circles or whatever, the communities you're in now, you know, that there's slang that you have depending on the city you're in and where you're from that you think your friends will get. Not that they're all like super private inside jokes, but sometimes like you know that someone would be like, oh yeah, we get it, we're on the same page, like we've seen these things before. They're not all the same art history things, but you know that like you can like look at a picture and both get the joke because we've all been watching the same TV show or listening to the same music or on the same like social media platforms that now are the things that keep you in touch with your social consciousness and culture of the people your age kind of thing. So yeah, I think that, I don't know, I just probably gotta wait a while, but I don't know. Hopefully they'll look like they're from now. Hopefully I try to be like, okay, I hope that the art looks like it's from the year I made it in, and maybe people can look back and be like, that was what it was like then, kind of. I don't know.
It's interesting that I don't have a chance to see your work, but it's interesting that you just said that, because could you speak more about that? And I find that really captivating. Image of the woman's hand with the red nail polish.
Oh yeah, it looks red through. That's
well,
nice.
Yeah, it does actually.
That's good.
Huh?
Yeah, it's red. It's super red.
It's red, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I find that image really interesting on so many levels. I haven't had a chance to track it to work because I barely saw it. I got rid of it too. So, but what you just said really seems to ring to a bit of that image of my children. It's obviously. The first image you see. I'm not sure what's in the back of it. I haven't seen it.
But. Oh, yeah. It's my sister driving her mom's Lexus and eating a cucumber. I like the car things because, like, okay, there's this funny thing that happened in Emily Carr where I first noticed, which was just, like, I remember, like, at that time, does anyone remember, like, old Aritzia ads? This was, like, when people were starting to do fake, like, Holga filters, like, plastic camera filters that have, like, light leaks on 35 millimeter. It's, like, a very washed out, like, nice color.
Yeah.
What would you call it? Like, indie or whatever.
Yeah.
Just, like, Polaroid effect.
Yeah.
And I remember people would show them, and I remember, like, people in my class being like, oh, yeah, like, your friend's on a cliff, it's like this ad look. And then instantly art school settings would be like, oh my gosh, it's so like film noir. And like they, like teachers that like don't go to the places we go would be like, wow, this is so much like this movie. And then realizing that we were referencing that, but we hadn't gone back to see like the citations, that things had slowly trickled down and we were approaching them through our ads, through, we're just picking it up without realizing it's just like this homogenized like filter kind of thing. But that's sort of what I like, that I can do that with, like, I don't know, photos that have to do with cards thing, like they can still be like this personal thing and like I can still see images like that, and they're kind of like what I think is like, I like fashion photography. It'll remind me of like a kind of glossy fashion ad, but you know that the fashion ads have been around for so long, and before they even took from movies or stuff like that, they're all from, because of like the technology and because of the history of advertising and because like art takes from advertising and advertising takes from art or whatever. Does that kind of make sense, maybe?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's really interesting. There's so many levels. What's the relationship between that and the bird?
Oh, yeah, the bird? Oh, yeah, that's a bird. This is, the goal for that one was, it just sort of happened to kind of like care about color and monochrome. There's like both sides are just green and black. So the other side came first. There's like a fence with green detailing. And this is a 4x5 image I took in school on Kitts Beach early in the morning after doing event photography, where I started taking photos of Kitsilano without anyone in Kitsilano, like if you're there that early, and wondering, could you really tell photos of a neighborhood or public spaces if there was no people in it? Sometimes, like, Kitsilano, people dressed in Kitsilano, you can be like, oh yeah, I'm in Kits now. Back then, I really thought that. It'd be like, it is super yoga or whatever. And, like, Main Street's like that now, too. Like, you'd be like, you can't really tell, but, like, can you tell a neighborhood from, like, the public dressing, with the type of class it looks like then? And also, like, so that was that project, and I, again, like, I was doing the thing where I was going back to looking at old images. And this file had been kind of corrupt, so it had turned green on one version, and I used that, and I printed it and rescanned it, so it has, like, a double, it's sort of, like, pulling away from it. It's super distorted. So, like, the actual negative, which I is from, like, 4 years ago, but that image was printed and remade and turned green, yeah, like, a few months ago kind of thing. I kind of like that, too, just, like, does that kind of make sense? Like, reprinting it is also, like, remaking the photo again without going out and taking a photo with the camera. But for the most part, I think, I know the birds, yeah, it's kind of, I hoped it was, I thought it was kind of funny. I was like, oh, let's put the bird right in the middle. It'd be pretty funny. Put a bird on it.
It's interesting because in the 50s, there was a lot of reference. I mean, I looked a lot from a feminist perspective to things, but there was a lot of discussion about women being birds. Like, that's something
oh, yeah.
men would say. Like, I grew up in the 70s,
yeah.
so we were called chicks in the 70s. But I know in the 50s,
I didn't even think about
birds.
That.
So you probably don't know that reference, but I'm, you know,
I no, no, no. I forgot birds. About that. No, 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 for sure.
And I just thought that was interesting because you mentioned that you were,
yeah.
of course, like,
no,
so
no for sure.
Photos, so.
There's something over-presentedly feminine about these two images on the back.
Yeah, yeah,
there's like, because there's another sort of like quaint, poetic little photo of like Else like holding a point-and-shoot camera with like, you know, you're cropping the eyes out, which is like big, bad no-no when you're also like doing work that is a stream of photography with the representation of women, be like, can be quite violent to do that kind of thing. And then just keep similar things that point towards this like feminine representation kind of thing. So there's like that I had in mind and I wondered about too, in terms of like, photography has like a long history with that too, where like now people are undoing that, people are like, even reclaiming, like all sorts of things are happening. Like with the reclaiming of like self-portraiture and stuff like that in women that I'm, I don't know, I'm thinking about.
Yeah, interesting. There's a lot of layers to this work, which is kind of makes it interesting.
That's good. I hope so. Thank you. You're probably good.
Cool.
Thanks
very much. Thanks. Thank you, everyone.